Google time.
He broke
his elbow for the Googleth time.
Googleth time.
That's one followed by 100 zeros.
You motherfucker. Hey, how does that work again? How is it so many zeros?
Hey, Mike, want to take care of some business before you yell at Joe for making you feel like an idiot? Oh, by the way, how is your Snapple?
It's tasty.
Good, right?
It's the mango mango tea.
Yeah.
It takes two to mango, it says.
Yeah, it does.
And also, Google fact.
Snapple fact.
I know, I said Snapple fact. A Google is a number.
It is.
Hey, Joe, what's that number?
It is one, followed by 100
no,
zeros.
No, say it.
Oh, it's 10 to the 100th power.
Which means?
Which would be 10 times 100. Well, 10.
Oh, see.
10.
That's what you thought.
Times 10, 100
times. I thought
times.
It, man. But I knew better, you piece of shit. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast. Times. It call comes naturally. As always, we ask you to such help us a little bit. First, go to our Facebook page, like and share the Facebook page. Then, follow us on the Twitters. Our Twitter handle is?
I am Groot.
And then head on over to iTunes and rate the podcast, review the podcast, and subscribe to the podcast. And now we have to ask Joe more questions so they don't think we changed our Twitter handle to I am Groot.
Joe, what's our Twitter handle?
At Comes Natural Pod.
There we go.
There we go.
Speaking of that, Comes Naturally, we are...
Joe.
Mike.
I am Cody. Welcome to this week's episode, everybody. If you didn't know... Guardians of the Galaxy Volume Dos, or 2 as they say here in the States, came out last Friday. We have seen it. Some of us have seen it a couple times.
One of us seen it once.
Pussy!
Joe, so...
We are gonna spoil some stuff.
Oh, we're gonna spoil the fuck out of it. Kurt Russell's a big piece of
shit.
Spoiler.
That is true. There's a lot of truth to that.
So if you don't want to hear spoilers like the one Mike just said out loud, even though it's drastically out of context, stop listening now. Just fast forward to, I don't know, just guess. And if you guessed wrong, Mike's going to spoil some more stuff for you.
I'll spoil a lot of it.
Yeah.
I'll spoil all of it.
So first off... We will get everyone's impressions, not impressions, but impressions. No, impressions.
Oh.
There you go.
Impressions.
This is my impression of Mike.
We're going to start with Joe, because I want to forget Mike's here. That fucking comment.
Impression.
I would like to get Joe's depression of the movie.
Now I'm in a deep state of
depression. I'm so sad that it's over. It's my depression of the movie. I absolutely loved this movie from beginning to end. I think it's actually, I want to say it's actually better than the first movie. It's been a while, honestly, since I've seen the first movie.
Wouldn't that make it, if it's better than the first movie, wouldn't that put it in the best movie of Marvel so far?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you guys are Guardians is a favorite.
Yeah, quite easily.
Yep.
The way the movie begins, just absolutely fucking hilarious with Baby Groot sitting there fighting those little...
I can't remember what they're called.
Yeah.
Something with an N, I think.
But then he plugs in the amp,
yeah,
and the credits start rolling in.
My favorite part about that is
he's just fucking dancing around. He misses it a couple times, yeah.
And hits it, and then like...
You kind of hear it start to...
Yep,
like a little...
His eyes just get all big, and he's like, oh... And then he just starts dancing around the battle going in the background. And what's beautiful about that is because they show you this battle in the trailers. So you are, like, expecting this big thing to happen. And after a while, like, we realized this was going to be the beginning of the movie. But the fact that it happens in the background.
Majority of it happens in the background, yeah.
Of this is fantastic. Just fantastic. I think
and better in 3D, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal in 3D.
For some of us who have seen it, multiple ways. I know Jen doesn't like to see 3D,
there,
so I know you guys went regular, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a scene, and because of the 3D, I actually got a little bit of that, like, oh, I feel like I'm about to fall thing.
Ooh, which one was it?
I'm trying to remember.
I remember thinking that, too.
They were like panning.
I just remember thinking, like, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
There was, like, one scene they did it.
There was
really,
one particular
really well.
Scene. It was just so well done.
The one that got me all like, ooh, good, was when the side of the drilling ship got ripped off, and you see into the vastness of into the core of Ego, and it just goes forever, and then the camera switches to Mantis's, and she walks the other way. I was just like, oh, I'm gonna throw up, because it was like a, hey, we're gonna focus all over here, hey, real close. I'm like, I'm good. I'm trying to think what part they would have panned at where you would have.
God, what was it?
Can't remember.
And just so you guys know, we saw it when we saw 3D. We saw it on the full screen IMAX, so full size IMAX 3D,
legitimate IMAX,
not us crammed into a regular theater IMAX. Which some of them are much better than they used to be. But there's nothing that compares.
How much
to
do
that.
You hate regular theater seats now? I feel like a fucking movie theater.
Oh God,
now,
the IMAX seats.
That was the first time. So.
I think that's the first time since Estrella opened that I've been in an auditorium.
No.
Actually, it might have been.
For you, yes. For us, no.
Yeah.
Because we've been to Surprise.
So, like, the last, like,
a couple
15 movies I've seen.
Oh, yeah. That's an experience that I just want to forget about because that was awful.
Yeah.
It's an AMC now, but it's still, like, fucking awful.
So, so the difference between the IMAX theater seats and, like, say, a regular movie theater that doesn't have power recliners are the seats are very narrow. They have the old wooden armrests. You know, they go to a cup holder, but they're like the old style ones, and they don't really
recline. But it's
like,
if you don't, if people are listening to this and they're not fortunate enough to have a theater near them,
fancy theater,
where they get the recliner seats and the nice big armrests, and you have plenty of room. Like, I know we sound like assholes for talking about this, but recently,
hashtag first
a really nice theater opened up closer to near me, but we've all gone to it a few times. And it's a pick your own seating in every theater. They all have the reclining chairs. And I got so fucking spoiled by it because this was the first time since I started going there. I went and saw Logan at AMC, but that was the one auditorium
had similar
there
seats.
That had similar seats. Their seats actually might have been a little bit better than Harkin's one. Those are really nice seats.
I like those ones because if you go with someone you care about, you can actually move the middle arm up.
Yeah, so that was pretty dope.
Yeah.
Isn't that the one that also has like the subwoofers under the seats? The
drivers? Yeah, the Dolby one has.
Yeah.
So that one's super dope too. But then go into these regular theater seats. I was like, I hate touching the person next to me during a movie. It's the worst.
Didn't we go to Arrowhead at one point for something recently, though? Like, fairly recently?
AMC 14?
No, Arrowhead Harkins.
Arrowhead Harkins.
I don't remember.
No.
If it was, we were slow. It was like a... No?
No, we haven't been to Arrowhead Harkins in a while.
In a while, right?
I haven't, anyway.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
But yeah, so, like, as much as I love the IMAX experience, especially IMAX 3D, and going to a proper IMAX, I just, like... Only certain movies are going to make it, you know, like Guardians. I'm very happy to make that drive and sit in that theater for that experience. But it's going to have to be an experience, I'm guessing, is going to be visually like a Guardians from here on out. Like, I'm not making that drive for, like, another Mission Impossible down the road.
We need to do is we need to buy our seats with one in between each of us.
Yeah.
So most likely nobody's going to buy a single seat in between somebody. Otherwise, they're a fucking dick bag.
A weirdo.
Just so we have that a little bit extra room. Because, man, Mike trying to grab my thigh was uncomfortable. Even with the lights on.
I thought it was hilarious.
Because it wasn't happening to you.
Exactly.
It was a very strong and firm grip.
But, yeah, so it...
How do you think felt... I got it?
No, I'm good. No, I felt like I was going to be controlled any moment.
You were coming close to. Yeah.
I tried to get him... To pull an Eric and spit liquid all over himself and
that's
us.
Awful.
But.
Yeah, I wish more theaters were like that. I mean, just going to the IMAX, like, almost right away, we were experiencing the things that I fucking hate. It's like, okay, somebody needs to cross in front of you, so you stand up a little bit.
Yeah, those because If you've ever been to one of those, anybody listening, it goes, the seats go up very high, very quick. So it's not a very deep theater.
It's very steep.
And when they do that, the rows are extremely close.
Yeah.
Like, extremely
like, close. I hate AMC, the whole experience of AMC, but I really love that auditorium they have. But, like, I feel like if I go back to that one, it's going to have to be, like, on a Tuesday afternoon or something like that. Because, like, just everything else about AMC blows.
Yeah. That's why I was thinking Sunday night at the IMAX late would be not that bad. I mean, obviously, it was opening weekend for Guardians. No. So it wasn't the best choice in the world. But
yeah.
It was gorgeous.
Absolutely gorgeous.
The movie, not the theater. Theater's fucking
yeah,
so old
theater
and trash.
Is just, well, it's a theater.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better than the Surprise Theater, but whatever.
Well, yeah.
But gorgeous, absolutely fucking funny. Just
well, the movie is
hilarious
yeah.
all the way through.
Super fucking sad.
Yeah, let's not get into that.
Oh, we're going to get into it.
God, well, you can get into that. You like being depressing.
It's fucked up, bro.
I wasn't going to mention it.
Yeah, you were. Because I was going to bring it up. Not me. Mike was going to bring it up. Because much like myself, Michael weeped as well.
Oh, yeah.
The first time.
Yeah, the first time.
Second time, I knew I was around in an unsafe place for my emotions, so I made sure I tried hard.
The
not
second
to,
time, I knew AKA it was going to come up, Jen? So I knew the lines that were going to happen, so I was already welling up.
Yeah.
And as soon as they were said, I was like, just weeping into my beard. I was like, well, no one can see you cry in the dark unless they turn around where the light's reflecting off.
I cried the first time I watched this. I cried like as much as I cried, not as much. But I haven't cried as much during a movie since Manchester by the Sea. And that movie was created to make you cry. So, James Gunn, good job, you fucking dick. Cause
Manchester Sea, produced by Kleenex.
Yeah,
the emotions ran high on both ends of the spectrum. And everyone in between, really. There was moments where you cried because you were laughing.
Mm-hmm.
There was times where you cry because, God damn it, it was sad. Other times it was like a happy cry, and I'll spoil it. It was during the funeral scene.
Yeah.
Like, it means so much.
We'll go the last 15 minutes of the movie, because there's very subtly put in there underlining tones of, like, what's going on, and you kind of feel sadness for everybody and emotion to everybody. But it's very understated, and it's surrounded by action or comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The last 15 minutes of the movie, they just fucking bombard you with emotional shit.
Well, it's
and
where everything comes, everything that they set up from.
Everything was setting up to those last 15 minutes, just emotionally nut punching you.
What you don't realize is the first three quarters of the movie, James Gunn is setting up these emotional dominoes in this mm-hmm. elaborate design. Then you get to the last 15 minutes, he's like, yo, like this. And he kicks you right in your emotional gut, which is actually your gut. And as more dominoes fall, the more you cry. And he literally does not, like, it'll start to have this gap, and you're like, oh, it's gonna, and then he hits you again, and then again. And then finally at the end, he's just like, open hand slapped.
Yeah.
I was like, well, you buddy,
it was rough, man.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent though.
And whose funeral was it? Cody
Yondu's.
Yondu died, man. Yep. What the fuck?
Not only did he die, but his death had emotion, big emotion on it. It had weight to it, and it was actually well done, Joss Whedon.
Because you cared. That's the other thing. Whedon killed
Quicksilver
in that Avengers movie, and nobody gave a fuck, so you wasted a death in the Marvel universe for a character that you had no time to get invested in.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, if you remember, in the Avengers, he was like kind of a bad guy for the first half of that movie.
Yeah.
And then barely started helping, so you literally have only seen this dude being a good guy for like 5 minutes of screen time. And then he dies, and it sucks. You're like, oh, I didn't want that to happen. But I didn't feel like there was any emotional connection to him. And I'm like, well, if you're going to kill off a character in a movie, like, make it mean something.
Like all the deaths in Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Well, not all the deaths in Saving Private Ryan. The main character deaths in Saving Private Ryan. By the way, spoiler alert, if you don't know, majority of the cast of Saving Private Ryan dies.
Yeah.
In the bulk of the movie, especially Vin Diesel.
And what doesn't help this with Quicksilver is that he existed at the same time over in the X-Men universe.
Yeah,
in the
X-Men part,
movie.
Yeah, not even.
But like, I'm saying, but that's what I'm saying is like.
You had a different one. You can
you
go
had a different
to,
one, yeah. But it was the same character. Like, it just didn't. This didn't mean anything.
So with I'm trying to think. Marvel, it's the only two real deaths, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, real deaths. But.
Of a headlining character.
Yeah. So this one, you have the first Guardians movie with Yondu, and you there's you. On the surface, he's kind of a bad guy, but not really, because he helped out when he needed to. And then at the very end, you know he's not a bad guy, because he knows he got taken by Star-Lord, because he didn't give up the stone. And he smiles. Like, it wasn't like he opened up the orb and saw the troll and got mad and threw it. He opened up the orb, saw the troll, and he smiled. Mm-hmm. And you're like, ah, Yondu's a good dude. And in this one, you get some more of his backstory, why he is the way he is. There's some sad shit. And even the scene where he's just got done fucking the sex robot, which...
Robots.
If you haven't seen the movie, don't worry. There's not this weird sex robot scene. But...
Which is a shame.
It's implied.
He was his father. He's blue.
Yeah. So, but even that scene... Like him getting dressed and he's like, he looks like disgusted with himself and he kind of hates everything and all of his like crew is out having fun and he just kind of is in there and you're like, oh shit, this guy is obviously empty, you know? And then he, you know, spoiler, kind of saves the day, especially for Star-Lord.
So he saves Star-Lord.
Yeah. Saves his
from
life.
Dying.
And
twice,
then the speech he gives and everything, and you're like, by this time you have essentially two full movies to really like this character, and so
not to cut Mike off real quick, and by the time the scene Mike's talking about when he saves Star-Lord's life after giving a speech, there's build up to it because there's two parts right before that you get really the insight into Yondu's character and the fact that. You find out why he saved him, or why he never delivered him to his dad, which we'll get to in a minute. And then the other thing is he breaks down himself to Rocket to help Rocket accept what he needs to get past what he's trying to
let him in.
But you get that and you're like, oh shit, and then you get that moment where like you essentially know. Something bad's gonna happen because, like, shit's gonna go down. You're like, oh, and you're like, God damn it, just someone make this not happen. But the thing that got me, speaking of the troll, not to cut you off, but I had watched the first movie before I went and saw it on Friday. I watched it Thursday or Friday morning before I went to work.
As funny as I watched it Saturday morning before I watched it
with us.
No, Saturday.
Oh, Saturday morning. Yeah. No. And so there's so many things in the first one, if you have those fresh in your mind and you watch the second one, you remember parts of it, and one of them is the troll.
Yeah.
So if you're paying attention when the part Mike was talking about, the end of the first one, when he opens the orb thinking he's going to have the Infinity Stone, and it's a troll, during Yondu's funeral, they're all setting down trinkets, and Star-Lord sets that troll down, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh God! Because at first you kind of don't know what's happening, because they're all set, like there's candles being lit and they're like setting stuff down, and you've seen parts. You're like, you just don't know what it is. But when he sets, like, the one that triggers it is the little, I don't know if it's cat with that little blue crystal one
that he got from the first.
Yeah,
one.
You see that set down by Gamora, and then you see Peter's hand put down the troll, and then it shows Yondu's face with the Ravager medals being. Draped over him, and you're like, fuck, you're not going to switch around, you're not going to see him die, because it reminisces that whole part from the first one when Star-Lord gives Gamora his helmet, and he starts to freeze to death in space, and of course it cuts, and he's inside alive. This does the same thing, except for it stays on that for a long time, and he just kind of drifts the same way.
And they set it up because you see a couple of people die that way, so you kind of know, like, you know the timing in your head of how long in this world it takes or universe it takes for someone to die in that situation. Because going back to the first one, you saw how long Star-Lord lasted. And then earlier in the movie, you see how long it actually takes for people to die. And it stays on it just long enough to let you know you passed that death mark. And it's just like, fuck, dude. That one was heavy.
Yeah, and then the part I was talking about where you cry happy tears, and I don't mean those kind of happy tears, Joseph. I meant the kind you're in a good mood and you're on the edge of crying, but it makes you cry more, is the funeral scene when they incinerate his body, the ashes are floating into space, and all these ships start jumping in, and you don't see it at first, you see everyone looking at something, and then they finally show it. And it's the ashes flying through all these ships that are now shooting off flares that look like fireworks. And you find out that it's a Ravager funeral. And you realize, and then Rocket says what he did, he basically told all of his old Ravager buddies what he did. And they basically reconciled their differences with him and came to give him a proper funeral. And it's a happy moment.
And
where,
going back to that, I know we're jumping all over the place, but they foreshadowed Yondu's death.
Let's just start from the beginning. We'll just catch up.
Nah, why? Nah. We never do. But they foreshadowed Yondu's death earlier in the movie with Sylvester Stallone's character.
Stakar!
Yeah.
Or Starhawk, if you want to go by his original name.
So, and then he comes back for the funeral. So, but like, you don't even, when they talked about it early in the movie, I was like, oh, that's just something he's going to say because he's mad at him, but. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. They gave us a warning.
Unlike the first movie, he foreshadows everything.
A lot, yeah, dude.
The first half of the movie, he, like, literally everything, even from, like, the opening scene, opening scene, too, because he plants the plant with his, or he shows his mom the plant. Ego shows his water lily. The plant, and you're like, oh, what's it plant for? And then you forget about it until way later. That just pays off. He literally sets everything up in a way where, like, you're going to go back to it, but in a way that you forget what it's... Like, it doesn't, like, blatantly say, like, hey, you're going to die.
No.
It's just it's something, and then when you remember back at it, you're like, oh, shit, like, that's right. You know, so it has that... Adds that extra oomph to it, because you're like, you know, Rocket tells them, they show up, you're like, oh, shit. Yes, you know, he's getting that send off from his former crew and friends that he should. If Mike doesn't want to recall the whole movie from the beginning, we will go to top three favorite things from the movie. Michael. Favorite scenes. Top three favorite scenes.
Favorite scenes. Joe, you go.
God damn it.
Joe, you go.
Well, off the top of my head right now, you have the opening credits, because they're absolutely fun.
Yep.
Let's see, specific scene.
Or we can be part of a scene, like if you wanted, like, one specific portion of a scene.
No, and that's what I'm thinking. I think the expanded version of the Mantis, where you first meet Mantis, and she's doing the... Inside the ship, and she's doing the readings for everybody. Whole scene was pretty funny. The Drax just fucking hilarious.
Drax kills it in this movie.
Oh, so my hard. God. Oh, you're so ugly.
Hideous. Oh, hideous. Look at her.
Oh, my God. Just so many of those fucking scenes that he does.
So well done.
And, you know, probably a little bit of the ending, right, where Star-Lord, because throughout the whole movie, you find out, I mean, at the end of the first movie, you're like, you know, he doesn't know his own father, and he's always wanted to know his own father. Here he finds his father, and once he gets over the fact that this, you know, could be his father, because he finally accepts it. He is just so into it.
Yeah, he just goes
so happy. He's so happy with it.
Yeah, once he controls the light, like that obviously proves the fact that he is who that the ego is saying that he is. It changes the outlook he has, and like changes his demeanor the entire time.
But then the fucked up shit is what you learn about that that ego is wanting to do, basically turn everything into him.
Yep. He wants to control.
He wants to
the
control
entire galaxy.
But the part that I'm talking about is once you get past all of that, that you're learning just as backstory, and you get to the part where they're fighting ego, and you have Yondu, who gets taken out, and essentially the speech that you talked about earlier, where he's saying, you know, I don't control the
arrow
with my
head.
I control it with my heart. You know, and that's
it's a Rocky speech.
Well, no, what I'm saying is it's that like sudden realization in Star-Lord that literally Yondu has been his father this whole time.
Yep.
So that scene is actually, it's a very powerful scene because it's been set up for two movies.
Even though in the first one you didn't realize it.
But you got hints of it because, and they address it in this movie. They say, Yondu threatened to eat him like a bunch of times when he was young. Well, I'm just joking about that. You know, who taught him how to fly a ship? Who taught him how to do all this stuff? Who taught him how to shoot a gun? Exactly. You know, you're suddenly, and even Star-Lord Peter Quill is realizing, oh shit, like this is the guy I've been searching for this whole entire time, but this is the guy that is actually raised me and made me who I am. And so that scene right there was absolutely fantastic. So those would be my three scenes that I can think of right now.
Michael.
All right, after thinking about it and not listening to anything Joe said, my favorite scenes...
Hold it, Joe.
Just kidding. Actually, the opening credits are fantastic because it kind of sets the tone for the first 80% of the movie. And then you get real fucking sad. But that's a lot of fun. But my two favorite smaller scenes, not such on a broad thing, was when Ego says putting that tumor in her brain was the hardest thing I ever had to do, and Peter comes out of that trance and just shoots him, just bam, like
who
he goes,
do you think
what?
You are?
Yeah, he goes what, and then like his eyes go back to normal and he gets out of that trance, and it's literally about a second after he says it, he clicks back into Star-Lord and both guns out and just shoots the shit out of him. And as soon as that happened, like it reminded me, I don't know if you guys got this, but like I instantly, the first time I watched it, thought of Han Solo, that scene where Lando sets him up. And they walk into that room, and Vader's just, there.
The quick draw.
Fire, yeah, and he just, as soon as he sees Vader, he just guns out and starts shooting, even though he knows it's not going to fucking do anything. So I thought that was super dope. I was like, oh, that's fucking badass. And because you know, by this time, you already know Ego's a bad guy, but you don't exactly know, like, why or, like, to what extent.
You don't know how far he's gone.
Yeah. And then when he says that, it's a gasp moment, and then Star-Lord goes into action instantly, which was super dope. And then my other favorite scene is during the Ravager funeral, the speech that Rocket gives, or when he's talking to Quill without looking at him, and then Quill gets what he's saying. That part was
because
really,
he references
really good.
The batteries.
Yeah. And Quill just instantly says, like, of course not, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was really, really rough. So
it's a man emotional scene, too, because it's two men coming together as brothers. I will have to say my three favorite scenes, number one will be, well, okay, let's see. Number three, so least favorite of my top three favorites, will be the arcade-style drone controlling scene where like the
yeah, that's pretty fun.
You like you see the drones and she says, you know, you're not killing anybody. They're remotely controlled, and you jump to that, and it's got arcade sounds, and you realize it's just like, essentially a game to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like they disassociate killing these people because they're not, you know, like, but it's fun to them. They know they're doing it. I'm not saying they don't know they're killing people, but they make it a game. It made me laugh because it was like all video game-ish, and they're just like angry when they get blown up and
but
stuff.
But even towards the end of that scene where it's down to just the one pilot left. Okay.
My favorite part of that is the Drax portion of it when they get the back of their ship taken out and Drax takes it into his own hands because the guns are down. He hooks the little tow cable to his belt. Puts on the For Fun space suit, which I thought was hilarious. It's scratching there, For Fun. Takes a gun, then launches himself out the back, and he yells, "Die, spaceship!" And he shoots it. It just made me laugh, that scene. Like, but that whole, like, that little sequence is phenomenal. My second favorite one will be the scene, and this will be a snippet of the scene, the part where Star-Lord fakes asking everybody for tape.
That's good.
That was fantastic.
And it's, for an audio nerd, that scene makes me super happy because the audio shifts around the theater, mm-hmm. and you realize he's not going anywhere. He's just making it sound like he moved from one place to the other because you realize they have communication devices, so yeah. You should be able to hear the other person, but he fakes asking everybody, and when Rocket calls him on it about asking Nebula, he goes, well, she was sitting right next to him, so it's kind of like asking him. He's like, and he gets mad at him, and part makes me laugh. But the part that I enjoy about it is the audio because you hear Star-Lord move around through that opening that they cut through with the hole, and you realize he's not actually going anywhere. Makes me laugh. And number one favorite scene is the reveal of the potentially the villain for the third.
Man, you went stinger scene.
Yep, third volume of the Guardians of the Galaxy. I assume that's what they're leading up to is the fact that he will be their villain because of where he comes from. And who I am speaking of is Adam Warlock.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people assume because Adam Warlock was being held captive in a cocoon very similar to the one that's inside the collector's collection in the first movie when he gets destroyed by the chick who grabs the Infinity Stone and detonates in front of everybody, letting loose Cosmo and Howard the Duck, but destroying it as many other display cases. One would be a dark elf. The other would be a weird-looking cocoon thing, and the cocoon was wrecked. Everyone assumed that was the cocoon holding Adam Warlock. Little did we know, Adam Warlock hadn't been created yet. And in one of the stinger scenes, which is one of five stinger scenes that you have in the credits, so by far everybody stay all the way through. Because the credits have a bunch of fun stuff sprinkled in, and I'll get there in a minute. Or we'll get there in a minute. But you see the queen of these people in the villains in this movie, one of the villains in this movie, sitting there disheveled, and she gets approached by one of her aides, and they say they're ready for you, and she says they must be really upset at me for squandering their resources, but wait till they see what I've done, and they show it, and it's a big gold metal cocoon, very similar to the one you saw in the collector's thing, but made of metal and has all these wires. She says, "I will call him Adam." When I first saw this movie on Friday with a bunch of work friends, I yelled out in the theater, "Holy shit." And when I say that, my two friends here in the room with me know I don't ever talk very loud in a movie, especially the first time I see it. I legitimately yelled out loud, "Holy shit." And I was so excited because right when she said that and they show the cocoon, I instantly saw from the comic books the first time Adam Warlock and Thanos ever met. And Thanos says to him, like, if I'm writing the line correctly, he says, someone so small shouldn't have so much power. And Adam turns to him and says, oh, you haven't seen all my power. And one punch lays Thanos out on his ass. And I want to see that on screen. I want to see Adam Warlock, a human-sized person, no bigger than Star-Lord or Bucky or Cap or any of those guys, punch this 7-something foot tall purple man so hard in the chin that he falls on his ass. I want to see that.
It'd be fun. Yeah.
And that's just the comic book nerd in me that wants to see that. But yes, that was my favorite scene because it's such a fucking amazing reveal for a stinger scene that it's like, oh, God damn it. You did such a good job. The credits that I was speaking of, and you guys can chime in on this too, is full of just fun stuff. The hidden I Am Groots that reveal real words throughout the credits, which is really hilarious. But then the background stuff of like the pictures being drawn at first, and then the dancing scenes and little things like, if you don't know, from the Queen album cover is all four members of Queen with light hitting them from below looking up. They did that with all the different characters except for Groot, because he looks dead in the camera. Everyone else is looking straight up and has that iconic look of Queen to him. And except for him, and he's just like smiling right at the camera, and it's hilarious. But like the little stuff, like Groot popping up behind planets, and then like the constellations being drawn and making it look like the different characters.
Jeff Goldblum
dancing for no particular reason.
He's in his character for Thor Ragnarok.
Yep.
But shows up in this end credits.
The Grandmaster, as he's referred to.
Yeah, which was just like, that's hilarious, but what the fuck?
I believe that's... so originally, there was supposed to be a tie, the direct tie. Because, if you don't know, so far, the only direct tie Guardians has to the other cinematic Marvel movies is the Infinity Stone from the first movie.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only one. The only tie they have. There's no other characters that show up other than Thor's characters from the end of Thor 2 when they deliver to the Collector, which introduces the first ever Guardians of the Galaxy character, which is the Collector, into the cinematic universe. But in their movies, the only thing that connects them is the fact there is an Infinity Stone.
Yeah.
But no one from the other movies appear in the actual movies to link those two together. One thing I forgot to bring up is how dope was their version of hyperspace jumps?
It was pretty cool.
It was very fucking...
It's weird because we've seen hyperspace jumps in 1,000 movies.
Yep.
You know?
And then I got thinking, we never saw it in the first movie, right?
No.
No.
They were just flying. They got to places that were far away, but you got a sense of they were flying there. Yeah. You never really saw a jump of any type.
It was cool how like the grid thing would
open up, and then one grid spot, one little octagon, was it, right? Was it an octagon?
Something like this, yeah.
Hexagons, I think.
I'm at a hexagon. Opened up, and it was a completely different something on the other side. And even when they jumped through, I thought it was cool, and the sciencey half of it, they jumped from being in dead space to an atmosphere, and the ship lit on fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they broke into the atmosphere, but you didn't, you know, not from outer space, so it's a slow build. Literally just jumps through the hole, and just fire erupts, because the heat and the friction of the ship hitting, I'm going to guess, oxygen of some sort, because they were able to breathe there, lit on fire right away. And it was super cool.
But leads to another fucking hilarious scene
Drax. One of my... Drax is... But the other thing I was going to say, one of my favorite scenes, wasn't my top three, but it would have been my top five, is Rocket. I call it the Looney Tunes scene.
Yeah.
Because it's him setting all the traps for the Ravagers. And then the part where you see the overhead shot of the trees and you see the different groups, it made me laugh a lot. But, like, he, other than the one guy who gets shot in the chest by one of the other Ravagers, I don't think he really killed anybody.
No.
Because
it depends on what was
Yeah, the in darts those, hit them and they look Jones like they darts. Fall. Yeah. And it just looks like they kind of fall asleep because their eyes kind of roll back in their heads and they fall. Now, I'm not saying someone could have accidentally died by landing on one of those and impaled themselves and
I'm
bled out.
I'm sure
when
that
they're
somebody just, like, got a good concussion, probably just died from that.
Someone could have snapped the neck falling from the
Yeah.
And the electrocution thing could have gone wrong. Someone might have had a space pacemaker and they just fried and they weren't able to, you know, continue living. But that seems pretty hilarious. And even that whole thing playing out with the mutiny half of it was awesome too, because, like, you knew Nebula was going to step in because she was guilting Groot into letting her out. but the devastation she does when she does it, when she blows off Yondu's mohawk, which we find out is the controlling unit for his little arrow, more so in this movie.
Yeah.
You literally find out that's what it is. You, like, I literally was like, oh, shit, that dude's dead. Like, god damn. Because he looked dead when he was, like fell. I was like, that Yondu goes out? That's crazy. And then, obviously, it's not because you see him dejected and beat up in the chair.
Oh, but he goes out.
Oh, yeah, he goes out.
He dies.
But not before killing many people. So many people. Him and Rocket murder so many people on that fucking Ravager ship. It's one of the greatest scenes. And one of the most... the coolest looking scenes, both 2D and 3D, was the arrow breaking the lights and then killing all those dudes in the row. Every time he hits them and they light up, you can see it enter and exit somebody, then it goes dark, but you see the red light.
You know what that reminded me of? And I don't know if he meant to do this, because like the Han Solo thing I talked about earlier, I felt like with James Gunn, that might have been in play. When he, like, that thought might have been in his head a little bit. But this one reminded me, remember, the third Christian Bale Batman movie? When he's in the tunnel.
Dark Knight Rises.
And they bite from Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. In the tunnel. Yeah, and all the light in the tunnel is just off the gunfire, and Batman is just getting closer and taking out other people with each... like, that's kind of what it reminded me of. I was like, oh, this is dope.
But way more one-sided.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah. A, there's a whole no lot one to more shoot death. At if they were going to shoot at somebody. But also, Batman knocked those guys out. Air quotes, if you guys can see me. Yondu murdered those motherfuckers.
There are a lot of them.
Yeah. But in 3D, though, the most impressive one was the first one. When they come around the corner, and the guys stop there, and he throws the air and it goes slow-mo. Which, by the way, he uses slow-mo in this movie tremendously.
Yeah.
And you see the arrow
like a gimmick.
Enter, and you can see it push in, and then it cut through the material, and then
when the
hit
material
the flesh,
pop back out.
Yep, and it kind of swallows so the arrow and the red, I'm guessing trail, the engine trail, or whatever, the vapor trail, follows it through the hole, and then exits through the back, and then it cuts to like just jump shots of it just killing everybody in the hallway, but yeah, just the spinning shot of Rocket using the monitors to shoot people through the walls, and the arrow, and of course you hear the whistle as it just goes up, 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 and you see how intricate and crazily designed the Ravager ship is, and you just see like the trail just everywhere, and just bodies falling, getting shot, and like, oh, it was fantastic.
Way he takes out Taserface was fantastic too.
Taserface is like, I dodged it. I like the 3D played up more of the slow-mo scenes than I thought it was going to. And seeing it in 3D the second time, I think, made me appreciate it more. Because I knew what they looked like in 2D. But obviously you don't, Joe, so I'll explain the one specifically I'm talking about is when Star-Lord jumps off. So they've already cut the hole into Ego's shell, but it got stopped so it didn't go all the way through. And he jumps off, and right as he jumps off, one of the drone ships is coming at him. And he fires, and they fire, and you can see the blaster going to miss him, and you see him trailing. He's... and I love the effects they use on his gun, because I think it was played up a lot more in this one than it was in the first one. I think it was played up more in this one because of the fact that they have more money to play with this time, because they knew they were making it back.
A lot more money.
Yeah. But you saw too. You saw the trail from his gun... you know, kind of a chemical effect, and then you see their fire, and like you hit it. Oh, dude, it was so gorgeous. I was like, because it's so much depth, because you're inside the hole, and he's just outside, and he's moving. You see his jetpack propelling him, and then you see the drone coming in. Oh, so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
So good. So good. Yo, that Star Wars trailer was dope in 3D, by the way, was it not?
Yes, sir.
Not to distract us from this movie. I think we're done talking about the movie, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, Stan Lee's cameo. Fantastic. Both parts of it. Right?
Yeah. No, it was good.
Okay. Star Wars trailer. for Last Jedi.
Hold on, real quick before we get into that. Sylvester Stallone's in this movie. How fucking dope was that?
And no fucking Tango and Cash reunion.
I was
now
okay.
That I know what Ego's role in the movie was, it makes a lot more sense. Yeah. I never actually run into
but, like, I'm so fucking excited to see Stallone in more Marvel movies. Hopefully
total
their
of six.
Own.
I don't know how that fuck's going to play out, but...
Hopefully its own little standalone go steal some shit.
Because I can only count four that he would show up in at all. This is one of them. So Volume 2, Volume 3, and both Infinity War movies, which you aren't counting, is Marvel's The Avengers Infinity War, and then Marvel's Avengers Infinity Gauntlet are the two Avengers movies, or cinematic universe movies, really. So that's four that I know that they're in. Now, there could be two Stinger scenes from other movies.
Yeah, I was
leading into
say,
those ones.
What if he like shows up in?
Because those are counted as being.
That's
in a movie.
How, yeah, that's how Sam Jackson filled his up yeah. so quick.
Well, I was saying with Iron Man too.
Yeah.
That's why they had to rewrite his contract as a Hulk.
I don't know how they'll do it, but I want him in a big role. Yeah, because this was more than a cameo, but yeah. not much more. Like a very important part to it, to Yondu's backstory. But also, like, it could have been anybody. But it was dope that for this role. That's what I love about Marvel is they get these roles that literally could be anybody. I mean, going back to having...
Glenn Close as
Glenn
just
Close
the
as,
Nova
yeah.
leader.
Boss, yeah.
I'm spacing on the comedian's name that just passed away recently. It was the senator in the Iron Man.
Oh, Gary Shandling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Gary Shandling. Like, just roles like that where you're like, oh, that could be...
Literally
fucking...
could be any character actor...
Yeah.
In the world. Someone we didn't even know who
yeah.
was. And it's...
These really good actors.
And
going
but it,
the
other thing, too, is, like, when you have him, and they're, like, they have lines like, Hail Hydra.
Yeah.
Robert fucking Redford says, Hail Hydra.
Yeah.
Gary Shandling, in all seriousness, says, Hail Hydra. You're like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
yeah. And, like, Redford's was, like, a more intricate role.
Because he was
so
the
that
main
one
villain,
made
yeah.
more sense, but...
But
just the fact they're going out.
But to
and
see Robert
these.
Redford and
Ving
hear him
Rhames?
Say.
I didn't know Ving Rhames was in this movie.
Yeah.
How dope was that? And he's giant as shit.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, Ving Rhames and Stallone stealing shit. And then it didn't dawn on me, but the voice, the
robot head?
Yeah, it was Miley Cyrus.
Yes, and the crystal guy is Michael
Rosenbaum,
yeah, from Lex Luthor from Smallville.
Man, who's the girl? The head Ravager.
Not,
she looks super familiar, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I kept thinking her name. I kept saying her name wrong. She's. I can't think of her name right now. I kept thinking it was the chick from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That's Michelle Yao. That's the different lady. I can't remember her name. I know you know who she is.
Yeah.
But
the
like,
stinger scene, just to kind of give you guys context, was Stallone saying it was like essentially saying it was a shame that it took a tragedy like Yondu dying to get us back together, but I think he'd be proud of what we can accomplish or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just these all the heads of certain Ravager groups, and they're all fucking together as like a group, and it's like a seven team group.
Six, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, he ends it by fucking racking a space shotgun and saying, let's go steal some shit. And I was like, ah, give them a movie. Give them their own movie of them just stealing shit. It's going to be so good.
Make it a heist movie.
It could.
Yep. Ravager heist movie.
Yes. Yes. It could have nothing to do with anything else Marvel in
the
world.
To be, like, I mean, other than the fact
it could be a low budget for Marvel world.
I mean,
a low budget,
an
movie.
Ant-Man level budget.
It'd be lower than that, man. They can go in with like a hundred mil, less than a hundred mil,
less than a hundred mil. You say,
and go well for a Marvel movie.
Yeah,
we know
nowadays,
that shit's gonna
gonna
play big, but make it happen. I want Jon Favreau to come back and direct that one. Favreau directing the Ravager heist movie.
He's busy though. He's
fuck,
busy. Busy
fuck
on the
that
other,
guy.
Other side of Disney,
making cartoons come to life.
You love Jungle Book.
I do.
And you're going to love fucking Lion King.
I'm still confused by that, but we'll talk about that later.
It's in the same
all
way. Right.
Star Wars trailer is super dope.
Star Wars Last Jedi trailer, it's the same one. It's not anything new. Same
but
teaser
3D
trailer.
For the
but it was
3D, time.
And it was fucking dope.
Yeah.
Like, just like, again, I don't know. My favorite scene when Kylo is just twisting the blade in the air, but the depth you got on it, I was like, man, that anger looks even worse in 3D. But like the explosions were dope, and you see Phasma and her crew walking through the flames. You're like, dang. And you see it pose, X-Wing get engulfed by flames. You're like, dang. And you see him running down the hallway. Like, dang. Even Finn's fucking transport back to tube thing was fucking dope too. Because like you could see like into the glass, and you could see the imperfections and the scratches on it. I was like, dang. Mm-hmm. Dang, you guys is good at your job and shit. Like, yeah. This isn't your first gig. You know what I mean? that was dope. What else? No, the difference in trailers was odd to me. When I saw it the first time at a Harkins, and the second time at a Harkins, technically, and one in IMAX. Even though Spider-Man: Homecoming is gonna be in IMAX, there was no trailer for it in front of Guardians, but it was in front of the 2D version I saw.
I missed.
Which I thought was weird.
I got there just in time for the movie to start.
They were almost all the same, but there was... And so...
Like, I caught the Star Wars trailer.
We saw
the last one,
Star Wars, that. We saw Thor, we saw Dunkirk, we saw Mummy in front of IMAX.
Yeah.
We saw those same ones, but with Spider-Man. Huh. Also, when I saw it in 2D. Star Wars was last in both, though. Which I thought was weird in a way. Obviously, they're both space operas, but I would have thought Thor would have been the one that definitely would have been attached to every screen with Guardians, because it's the next Marvel only. Because obviously Spider-Man's the next one. Which I thought was weird that it wasn't in front of the IMAX version, because it is an IMAX. Maybe their deal doesn't apply to all those, because like, with all the Marvel movies, they're guaranteed an IMAX slot on all IMAX screens when they release. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine what else is going up against Spider-Man that would be infringing on that. But it's just weird that, like, because I saw the poster in the lobby, is the one of him laying on the roof of the train. So I expected to see it. Like, but it was weird.
Yeah, they just probably don't have it set up yet.
Horseshit. Dunkirk. So we got our first real story trailer. I don't think it's the final trailer, but it's our first full story trailer. That trailer alone gave me a panic attack. And I don't know how that fucking movie's gonna make me feel.
Depressed?
Because, fuck you. It's just the last, like, 25 seconds of the trailer. When, like, the boats roll, like rolling over on him, and the water's rushing in and pushing that guy up in the, and you can see like it's pushing him into the corner, which is the last bit of air, and then like, you have those two boats closing in on the guy, and they're trying to get him, but he's being sucked back by the, I was like, no, because I watched it on my phone for the first time, which was fucking dumb to do. I do that, and it ruins watching trailers. You need to see them on the big screen. Mm-hmm. At least the nice big TV, if not the big screen. But, and then seeing it on the big screen at the first time I saw Guardians, on the regular, normal size movie screen, and then seeing it fucking 9,000 feet wide on the fucking IMAX, I was just like, my heart is no longer strong enough for scenes like this. So unless you can give me a waiver or a thing, a contract saying that these dudes are going to be okay, I feel like that movie is going to make me have heart palpitations.
Oh, yeah. Most of those guys are going to die.
And the way that trailer starts off, too, when 400,000 men, I was like, man, that is a lot of extras that are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You trying to tell me all 400,000 of those dudes got out of there?
But at least, like, they gave more context to when Cillian Murphy's character gets picked up by that boat.
Yeah.
In the first trailer, yeah, so you're like, sure. Why is there... And then the guy, the boat captain's literally like, we're going to Dunkirk. And he's like, but people are dying there.
Yeah.
If we go there, we'll die.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it just made... This trailer makes it much more sense as, you know...
Because it actually gives you the context, but it's... reason it's called a story trailer for the people who don't know... is it gives you an idea of what the story is about. Because up until this end, I had no idea what like the Battle of Dunkirk was even like until I saw this trailer, and then I had to look it up because I can't imagine why. Like the word Dunkirk, I had heard before, but it held no actual meaning behind it. Especially when, like, probably should have looked it up when we first heard that his new movie was going to be called Dunkirk. Even though it totally sounds like a fucking, like, throwaway name.
Well, the thing is, with Christopher Nolan, you're not used to him doing these historically accurate, but these historical movies. You know, if Steven Spielberg would have said he's doing Dunkirk, you wouldn't know what it is, so you could look it up and, you know, and find out what it is. But with Christopher Nolan, you're just like, well, it could be sci-fi, it could be action.
Yeah, like Interstellar. Interstellar automatically knew it's sci-fi, right? You give me the name Interstellar, and it's him. I'm like, oh, it's in space.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not going to say, I knew what it was when he told me it was Batman. I knew what it was because it was Batman. But it goes back to, like, Insomnia. You say the word Insomnia, I know what that movie's about.
Yeah.
Dunkirk, I was like, what? Like, what's Kirk done with? Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then so like, it's weird that this I don't know how he landed on this particular story. I don't know if he has some kind of attachment to it because he is British, but like, it just seems like such a weird thing to pick on, like not pick on, but like, you know, choose for a movie that we've never really heard anything about.
Yeah,
but it also seems like, I think because it doesn't really have a super happy ending, but it seems like an amazing story of what happened. These people, so if you guys don't know, I'm gonna spoil a bit for you. These regular people who own boats on, I'm gonna guess, some ocean city area, I'm not too sure where they come from, they're English, get in their recreational boats and drive across to Dunkirk to basically help save these soldiers who are cut off by the bad guys. And this, I think it's all Germans, right?
Yeah, it's World War II.
Well, I mean, it's all, but this front is Germans.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they're cut off. Their ships are being destroyed. Nothing can get in. And they're stranded on this beach because the Nazis are literally surrounding them on land. And the only option they have is to be trapped on this beach. And so these regular people get in their boats, risking literally everything, including their lives, to try to rescue most of these 400,000 soldiers that are on this, they're stranded on this beach. And it looks intense as fuck. And I'm happy to finally see that they showed more of this new kid that he discovered. That's not Harry Styles. It's that new kid you see, the kid you see in all the shots in it.
Tom Hardy.
Not on the plane. The one, the soldier that's on the ground.
That kid's going places, let me tell you.
Tom Hardy?
Yep.
Yeah, he's gonna be a Batman movie. He's the kid that he discovered. I guess he's done something before this, but nothing of note.
Hmm.
So he believes that he's, you know, the next Christian Bale, I guess you could say. But yeah, so. Because Christian Bale was really nobody before Batman.
No. I wouldn't say so.
He built up a nice...
Not for the most part.
He already had American Psycho. And...
Yeah, but like most people didn't know he was.
Well,
this guy over here.
Well, he had... what else did he have? He had... The Machinist came out right before?
No. Yeah. Well, Machinist came out right before, but
yes,
it didn't have the same push and everything. The reason it got is because they knew that, hey, he's going
to
be Batman.
I'm saying, like, obviously it pushed him to superstardom. That's what I'm
saying. But for the
he headlined a movie. Oh, well, he headlined movies.
Yeah. Well, so Tom Hardy.
Not here.
Exactly. I'm saying he wasn't as big as a star until Batman. Okay. That's what I'm trying to get
That's
at.
Fair.
He wasn't a mainstream actor before Batman, is what I'm trying to say about that. I believe he was a star before. I mean, he would have had as much star power as he did if he wasn't in Batman. But I think he would have got there for sure. For sure. Faux show. Let's see, where we at? Yeah, we're there. Anything else? We didn't talk about NXT at all. We went to NXT last week.
It was fun.
It was fucking rad. It's just fun to go and be amongst them, like the people. Say them. That sounded super bad.
Yeah, dude.
About wrestling amongst fans? The fans, like the wrestling fans, because
I'm a lifelong wrestling fan, and I don't even like saying.
Yeah, well, I know.
I'm part of that group. Yeah.
The thing about it is, like, so if you watch WWE, any version of their live of their shows, their you know, their 19,000 shows they have, there's this interaction the crowd has as a whole that plays to the excitement in the ring. You know, they're obviously
a good crowd can make a good match great.
Yeah.
And a bad crowd can make a good match shitty.
Yeah.
You know?
So when you have like a WrestleMania or any of the big pay-per-view ones, those people there are like super excited to be there, and they like, you know, waited for tickets and blah blah blah, right? When you go to these small shows, I didn't know what to expect. Like, I didn't expect the participation to be as much as you see when you watch NXT on TV, when the crowd's singing along with the entrance music and playing up to Bobby Roode's glorious when he's in the middle of the ring.
Yeah,
and the ten for Dillinger.
For fucking everything at this
point.
Well,
yeah, this
week. The 10 chant has just literally taken over the world.
But then the interaction between the stars and the crowd is fantastic. The people who you're supposed to be booing and you are booing react to it. And then the people who are doing stuff, like when Bobby Roode had Ty Dillinger up on the ropes on the top, and he's coming down with the punch, you're supposed to count them out. 1, 2, 3, right? Because you're only supposed to get so many shots from the corner when you have someone down like that, right? But because everyone loves Ty Dillinger, and everyone loves the hates.
Every number outside of the pinning counts.
Yes.
Every number, if Ty Dillinger is anywhere in the vicinity, it's going to be a 10.
So
when the ref is trying to count people out on the outside, when it's a 10, 1 through 10, it's all 10.
It's just 10. 10.
Just 10, 10 over and over 10. And over again.
So the part I'm talking about, which you're not going to be able to see because it wasn't on TV, which is a shame because it was a perfect TV moment, is Bobby Roode has Dillinger up against the turnbuckle, and he's his feet are up, and he's pinning him there, and he's going to punch down, and he looks at the crowd. Hey, you're gonna count this out with me, right? So he swings once. Everyone yells 10. He looks up,
confused. Like he pulls his fist back, and he just looks up. So
and he goes
so
in
funny.
For a second one, and they go 10. He goes, "Shut up!" And he just yells at the crowd, and then he goes for a third one. We all yell 10 again, and then he's like, he just gets pissed off,
and he moves.
Yeah, and it's just that was so awesome to be part of. Like, but also like. To see, like, the fandom and the enthusiasm that people have with it. And we were kind of in a bad spot because some asshole behind us kept trying to be funny. And every now and then he'd land one that's kind of clever and funny. But for the most part, he's screaming nonsense and sometimes racist stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes, super racist stuff.
Sometimes not so subtly racist.
Oh, I don't think any more subtle. It was a stretching monkey. I was like, you're not allowed to say that even if you are of that color. Pretty sure.
Yeah, some of it was pretty bad.
Yeah. But for the most part, it was fantastic. I enjoyed it a lot.
I was happy I got to see DIY live for the first time.
Yeah, that was fun.
This is actually the second time I got to see Bobby Roode live, but a much different character for him than the first time I saw him live. And that was like 5 years ago, and in that 5 years, he is so much better now. Like, and he was good then, but what's funny to me, especially on a house show being a non-televised event, is you really know who the like experienced ones are, and it's not shitting on people who are still learning because people forget. But as cool and as popular as NXT is, it's still basically a developmental territory for people trying to get to the main roster. But it's kind of developed into its own brand. But you know, like, watching Bobby Roode, you're like, oh, this guy's just, he's head and shoulders above a lot of other people. Like, everything. Just his timing, his reactions, his moves. Like, it's just, and he didn't, if you really think about it, he didn't do that much during the match. But when you're really, really good, you don't have to do that much. You feed off the energy of the crowd, and you pick your moments, and you time it, and you pace it properly, and he's just fucking great at that.
And you realize, not to cut you off, you realize how much preparation and writing goes into it, because I'm spoiled for anybody who doesn't know this, that they're all pre-written. So you know who's gonna win, who's gonna lose. It's not like a coin flip before they go out there or an actual match. But you gotta realize, like, when they're practicing, I wonder how much he adjusts what's going on to how much the crowd's gonna react to something, or the stuff that he does on the fly then and there when they are reacting.
Okay, so this is what I'll say. For, like, that match, that was that tag team main event match.
The surprise tag
team
match?
That match happened, and I looked it up. It happened in Phoenix, it happened in Riverside, and it happened in San Diego.
Which is the 3 dates they did before returning to Orlando.
Yeah, so that was their 3-date tour through the Southwest. So that match happened, but I guarantee you the premise, because with Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger, Hideo, Tommy, have been doing this for so long, and especially Roode here in the States and Ty Dillinger here in the States, like, they know these fans really, really well. So I guarantee you they know going in, them at that level, the they beats. Know going in, okay, we're gonna do this. At some point we're gonna set up this spot, and this is our go home is gonna be this for the finish. Like, they know the outline. Everything else in between for guys of that level are just feeding off the crowd and seeing what they want to do and seeing what's working, or maybe trying some stuff to later on put on TV. When you get down to like a the women tag match, all those girls were, I mean, Ruby Riott was the most popular from TV, and she's only been on TV for a short while at this point.
Yeah,
I guarantee that match was probably much more step by step.
Like, it played the way it was written.
Yeah, like I don't foresee any of them being at that level yet to say, okay, we're just gonna call it in the ring, see what happens, and kind of get to this and this. I guarantee you that was a little bit more like, we're gonna do this. You're gonna cut me off. You're gonna get the tag. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna try to get the tag. You're gonna stop me. So on and so forth. Like, it's a little bit more planned out for them until they get the feel for it. But like, that's what, like I said, makes, when you see DIY, who's been wrestling on the indies for 15 years before coming to NXT,
together?
Like, no,
oh, separately,
yeah, separately, because they didn't come together as a team until NXT.
Okay.
But they've known each other for a long time, so it helped the transition along. So, like, those guys are, like, you know, like, when they go out for a match, this is going to be our ending. We'll get to it, and we got 15 minutes, whatever the time is they got. And they're going to go out there and play to the crowd. Bobby Roode, Ty Dillinger, they're going to go out there and play to the crowd. The other guys, Drew McIntyre, is at that level where he can go out there. His was a little bit more. That was his match was probably the most lopsided in terms of experience.
Oh yeah,
Drew McIntyre has been doing this for a long time at a very high level, at the WWE level. He was in the main event scene on the main roster for a stretch of time. Patrick Clark. He was on the Tough Enough show, and he's only been wrestling total for like 4 years, which is really nothing.
Infancy.
And like, most wrestlers will tell you it takes you 10 to get good, you know, like, that's a pretty common thing, and that's if you're going out there multiple times a week and having and touring and trying to get out there and do different
like Roger
things.
Strong's type of thing.
Yeah, so like, that one was interesting because you could see, like, Patrick Clark has something with that character, because some of the crowd, he comes out, he's at this weird, like, prince,
like,
slash Liberace character that
it's
he's
like a
doing
mix
right
between,
now.
A mix between Liberace and Prince with a little bit of Dave Chappelle's Prince thrown in.
Yeah.
Because it's played up more. Because with Prince, like,
it's
when
very
I,
it's flamboyant.
Like, yes, it's more flamboyant than what Prince would normally do.
Yeah, but he's got the purple tights, and he's got the weird, like Jack Sparrow walks, you know?
The saunter.
But he's on to something with that character, because as over and as popular as Drew McIntyre is, and as good as he is, and everybody loves him, like, some of the crowd started chanting for Patrick at certain points during the match. And that's not a knock on Drew McIntyre. That's a house show realizing that, like, hey, this Patrick kid
pretty fun
is fun, and he's got something. Like, you could tell there's something there with that character.
Yeah, because
it's not at the level it needs to be at yet, obviously.
Yeah.
And it probably, if he sticks with this character, he probably won't really sink his teeth into it for another 2 years until he gets it perfectly fine-tuned. And that's if he's really going after it. But that was probably the match with the most lopsided experience factors against each other.
You think so?
And that one, yeah, and that one was a lot of fun.
What about the Lorcan fight or match with Lorcan?
Oh, Oni and Cashazona? Yeah. Nah, Oni's been doing it for a long time. Okay, yeah, he's been on the indie scene for a while. Cashazona's great, too.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Because he's such a lumbering dude.
But when he turns it on, he's so fucking athletic. Yeah, you're like, oh, okay.
Like, a guy that looks like that shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
He does. Because you expect the stuff that he does, you expect a Drew McIntyre who does do that to do that. Like,
yeah.
You look at a Drew McIntyre, you're like, right, you're too fucking big to be wrestling. Yeah. But also, like, I see him jump off the top rope, I expect it. You see Cashazono do it, you're like, bro, you're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah.
And hurt him.
Yeah, he had this dope-ass spot.
He does need the onesie, though, because it's a little bit unsettling to see the Speedo with that.
I don't know if that's
better or worse.
His call or WWE telling him to put a shirt on. That seems like something they might do.
There are no rules.
But he's a chubby dude. But that's athletic as fuck, and he knows his character well. And just like the little things he does, like when he puts an armbar on somebody and he switches it out to the fingers and pull the fingers out, you know, like that kind of shit. That's good stuff, man. That's little details that, again, 10 plus years in the business, that's why he's getting stuff like that. And that's another thing. He probably didn't do that much. Like, Patrick got reaction, but Patrick was taking crazy bumps, doing nut moves. Yeah. Like, he was really going after it. And then the guys who were further along in their career, which seems counterintuitive because you would think, oh, this guy's doing all this crazy shit. That match is way more fun, but not necessarily. Like, it doesn't always make sense. So Bobby Roode probably fell 4 times in his match.
Yeah.
If
one was to get out of the ring and escape. Yeah.
And so he probably walked out of that match barely breaking a sweat and was the best match of the night. So, but it was a lot of fun seeing them all. And saw some people we haven't seen on TV yet. Like Patrick Clark, we haven't seen on TV yet. Briefly.
The two girls that went against
that one girl, Mandy.
Mandy Gold.
Mandy Gold, yeah.
God damn, she was hot.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. And then that tall black chick with the giant long
with
braided
fucking
ponytail.
What's her face right in the face with it,
dude. Mm-hmm. When you guys see this chick on TV, if you watch NXT, I don't know how far along she is or when she's coming, but she's touring, so that means she's probably coming soon to TV. This bitch has a braided ponytail going down below her knee. Like, when she's standing straight up, it touches like below her knee. And she hits people with it, and it's hilarious. But also, like, she stepped on it at one point when she was bent down. She went to get up. She, like, had to move her foot. I was like, that's not practical, lady. You got to cut that shit. You can't be stepping on your hair in a wrestling
match. Hair match, dude.
Oh, dude, that's got to
a mixed hair match with her.
And Baron Corbin.
Baron Corbin, and I don't know who their partner is.
Baron Corbin, you need to cut that hair, too, man. Because
he's losing it.
That shit's going bye-bye.
We'll just throw Drew McIntyre and Cashazono.
Because
they're going to long hair, but they're not going to lose. So we'll team those two up against. Oh, no, we need another female, though, right?
Yeah, we'll do Mandy Rose. Mandy Love. Mandy Love.
Mandy Love?
Max, what's her name?
Mandy Gold.
Mandy Gold. Sorry.
He's like, I'm in love. That's what I was trying to say.
I'm in love. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. Comerica is a weird setup for wrestling.
It's a theater. That's what I don't understand.
The seats are too...
the seats are fucking terrible.
Yeah, the seats are fucking awful.
Which is funny because they were better than the ones Joe and I were in for Perfect Circle.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have sat down at all.
No.
There was parts where I was thinking about going up to the railing behind us and just standing up and watching part of the show there.
Mm-hmm.
Seats are terrible, but even terrible. And Mike and I are big dudes, and those seats are very not friendly.
And Joe wasn't comfortable, and he is.
That's
no,
he's tall.
I had the opposite problem. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun.
And then Darkin slapped that lady in the face by accident.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Yeah, he was so excited to see us. We were talking, and he just hits this poor lady in the face because he's talking, frilling his hands about like Duncan, a madman.
That's what. That's how Darkin does it. Just flails around.
It was pretty funny, though.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
And we didn't say anything to the lady either. We were just like...
He said sorry, and then yeah, she went on talking. Yeah. But we did not say anything to her.
We're like, we're going to just ignore this whole situation that happened.
Let's just pretend that did not go on. So, yeah. I guess that we're going to wrap it up. Our producer's giving us the, you know, Joe's going to sleep sign.
Go home.
Yep.
So,
take it home.
Boom. There you are. How many Falcons are in a Google?
I want to Google Falcons.
Do it. You're going to get Falcons, the football team, most likely.
A Google of Falcons.
That's a lot of fucking Falcons, by the way. That may be more than any other bird on this planet.
Is there that many Falcons?
No. We would.
No.
Is there that many birds?
Combined?
Flying
probably
birds.
Probably not.
Animals?
The whole world.
Yeah, dude.
Count chickens.
100 zeros.
Count chickens.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to Google birds.
Google birds. How many falcons are in a Google? So I guess what we normally say at this point comes naturally. We are
Joe,
Mike.
I am Cody, and as usual, you fuckers just came naturally.
Yay.